welcome to the Face of Pro-Life. Today I'm very happy to be speaking with Dr. Lorraine Hartnett. In our last show, we talked with her about her upbringing. She was raised in a very Catholic family with a very good faith formation and a foundation. She was then pulled away from her support system of her aunt and her aunts and her grandmother to move to New York City, where she finished her Catholic education in a little less than ideal situation, and she strayed from the faith, especially in college. And it wasn't really until she got back, was practicing medicine, and had to face the challenges of losing her aunt and her mother. In fact, we were just speaking about how her her mother died on Divine Mercy Sunday after her saying the very first Divine Mercy Chaplet. Thank you for coming back and sharing your story with us. So we'd like a little bit, we'd like to hear a little bit more about your transition back to the faith and how you now use your faith in your ministry as a physician.
Well, it was pretty dramatic how I got back. As I told you, my mother was dying of cancer, and I took her to healing priests to pray for her, hoping, of course, that she would be healed. And the first one I had taken her to, I had seen the Divine Mercy image there. It was traveling around the country.
Wow.
And it was there up in that church up in Roxbury, Massachusetts. And I remember the priest saying to my mother, "Lorraine, you'll be healed. You may not be healed physically, but you will be healed spiritually." And she was healed spiritually. She went from being very fearful to, you know, being much more relaxed and comfortable, knowing that this was going to be the end for her. And it was, of course, very painful because I loved her so much. But soon after that, I joined a prayer group of some little old ladies making rosaries and having a little Bible prayer group in Kensington, Connecticut. And I'd go there every Tuesday afternoon, and I needed to get a Bible. So as I went to the Catholic bookstore up there and walked in the front door, I saw a book with a picture. I said, "I know that picture. That picture was up in Boston." And it was the little Divine Mercy prayer book. So I said, "I'm going to get one of those too." And I bought that, and I bought a Bible. And I began to pray the prayers of the Divine Mercy. And at that time, I had started going back to church. I had started going back to confession.
You need them most.
Right. I was back in my Catholic faith. Boy, you should have seen that confession. The priest goes, "Would you like a general confession?" I said, "I guess so, Father. I need it." So I was back in the faith, and I was the working in an ER. I was the director of an ER, and they had a non-denominational chapel in the church. And every day at 3 o'clock, I would go up there to say the Divine Mercy Novena. And at that time, my brother was in town, and he was spending time with my mother. So I thought I would give him the time, since he lives out of town, to be with her. So I was saying the Divine Mercy Novena every day at 3 o'clock, and it was came Divine Mercy Sunday. I was driving down to go to the first Divine Mercy celebration at the cathedral in Providence, and my father was going to go with me. My mother was obviously too ill, but she wasn't in the grips of immediately dying. I mean, you're not a doctor, so you wouldn't know, but there's dying and there's dying. I mean, there's people who are going to die right there, right now, which I know about, and then there are people who are going to die
linger for
in a while. So, in all of my pride, I thought I knew that my mother wasn't going to die right away, you know. So I called my aunt and said, "I'm coming down." And she said, "Your mother's in a coma." This was Divine Mercy Sunday. So I drove down there. And as I came into the front door, I saw my father kneeling on the ground, holding my mother's hand, and just constantly repeating Hail Marys. Now, this is a man who certainly took me to church all the time and was very active in the church. But I don't think I ever really saw him praying like that.
Yeah.
And he was kneeling on the ground, holding his dying wife's hand, saying Hail Marys over and over and over. And me being the ER doctor, I screamed, of course. There's my mother taking her last breath, so I screamed. I knew she was dying right there. And I went into my bag. I said, I'm taking out that Divine Mercy book. I remember there's a prayer for the dying you're supposed to do. I go over. Now it's funny, but it wasn't then. And I held on to my mother. And I over here, I'm holding the book and saying the last
the chaplet,
prayers.
Yeah.
Right, the chaplet and then the prayer for the dying. And she died right there, 5 minutes after I got there, on Divine Mercy Sunday. Now, what happened at that moment was I knew that that was...
That was
a lightning bolt. That was definitely a lightning bolt. That was my knowledge of miracles. Miracles happen. They're not always what you want.
Right.
They're not always what you think, but they happen. And I had read Faustina's diary. I knew that if you died on Divine Mercy Sunday, well, forget it. You know, you were going to be, well, forget it. You were just going to go up right up there and go right in. So I knew it was a miracle. Here was my mother, who was so faithful all her life, and God was really doing this for her. And it was the second time that I'd seen a miracle like that with someone in my family. When my mother was dying, my grandmother, to regress a little bit, she was dying in a hospital. This was before my big conversion. She was waiting for her son to show up, and I knew she should be dead. Again, in my pride,
right.
She should be dead. She shouldn't be alive. This is my grandmother, who I love so much. Her blood pressure was so low. But she waited hours and hours and hours for my uncle to drive from Michigan. And the minute he walked in the door and touched her hand, her EKG went flat. And, you know, here was another miracle. When my mother died on Divine Mercy Sunday, I said, wow, you know, this God is real.
Yeah.
This is no joke. He's touching my life personally. So after that, everything changed for me. Number one, my whole personal life changed, and I became kind of a church nut and a church junkie. You know, you could still ask me where Mass is at any time of the day or night in any place in Connecticut, and I can give you the schedule because I'm always working, so I know where to go. But I began going to Mass every day, and I began going to Eucharistic adoration, and I began praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet with my patients when they were dying. And I became very active in my faith. And I took a new job. This was after I'd gone through a big health crisis myself. I almost died of sepsis in the hospital. And I knew all I wanted while I was going through those days of being sick was the Holy Eucharist. That's all I wanted. So that was another time when God kind of pinned me up against the wall and just let me feel, you know, Him there. And so all I wanted was Him. So I was just being kind of, it was a courtship going on between me and Jesus, as you might say. That was that time of my life. And it was very beautiful. I was put in a new place of work. And at the same time that I came there, and now it's a big deal for a doctor to change jobs. You don't just change every day. I had been at one place for 10 years and another place for 10 years. I've been a doctor now. In 2009 will be 30 years that I've been a doctor. And you don't change just for nothing. But I felt like I wanted a change. So I went to a new place and an ER. And at the same time, a nurse came to work there. Now, her father had just died. And we became friends. At first, we were just friends at work. And then we got to know, you know, we were kind of Catholic. And then for the first January, for the first September, that was after my mother died. My mother died in April, and it was September. For the first September, and I had no one I was talking to about my faith. No one, except the priest in confession. I was not associated with any kind of group or anything like that. This was all very personal to me. And I decided that for September, I was going to work every Sunday, and I was going to offer it up for my mother. Hmm. I hated working on the weekends. I still do. Now I work nights, so I don't have to work weekends. But I didn't like working weekends. But I said, I'm going to work on Sundays, and I'm going to offer it for her.
Only Catholics understand that.
Right, only Catholics understand that. But, you know, hey, that's all right. I was really getting into all those things the nuns taught me were now, wow. It was like one of those chia pets. They were putting water on me, and I was like, wow, blossoming all over the place. Forget it. So I was just into everything. Ooh, and God was just wowing me with everything. And my eyes were open. It was like the scales had been taken off my eyes. So it was absolutely beautiful. And my first patient, now, You have to understand, you're an ER doctor. When you're an ER doctor, you're there to take care of patients, and you certainly like all the activity and the excitement, and God makes you that way. Most people want to run the other way.
Yeah.
But, you know, you want to get in there. But still, in the morning, you want to relax. So 7 o'clock, you want your coffee. You don't want to have someone come in with their head half off on Sunday morning. So I'm sitting there and having my coffee at the doctor's desk. I'll never forget that. And the bell rings, ding, ding. I had, patient, you know. I go back into my humanity. I'm a patient. I go in to see the patient, and there's a woman sitting there. And she has the most beautiful medal of the Blessed Mother. And so I commented on it, and we began to talk. And she said that she was very involved in the church, and we had this wonderful discussion about God.
Which you have been starving to find somebody to talk to about your faith.
And here was this woman on the first day that I'd given my mother. So I knew there was another little miracle for me, you know?
Wow.
And she invited me to this a healing service at a church. And I said, sure, what do I know? I didn't know anything. I really was not involved with anybody. So to be invited there, she wrote me a letter and said, you probably won't remember me. And I'm like, how could I not remember her? Here's this woman who comes in. I'd been talking about her for the month. And she invited me. So I went to this healing service at her church. And out of the corner of my eye, I see the nurse who worked with me over there.
Oh, no kidding.
And I said, she must be into, that's interesting. And you know, we went to work the next day, and we talked about it, and we began to see that there were so many things in us that were similar, that we'd both lost someone we really loved, we both had a very strong upbringing, we both had a lot of pain in our lives, but we were both really wanting to be strong Catholics, and we were also in the world and surrounded by people who weren't interested in that.
Right.
So we really hooked up together, and we began to say the Divine Mercy Novena every afternoon at 3 o'clock. We'd go outside to the little steps, I remember, and we'd say the Divine Mercy Novena. And I remember reading all the prayers and some of the words. What does this mean? What does that mean? So we started talking, and we had a ball, and we really became spiritual friends. And what happened was, as that started, people started coming into the ER who needed things. Now, we were in an ER that was separated from the hospital, so we don't have any chaplains there or any social workers. So it was kind of natural that someone needed to deal with that part of the patient's care. And I knew in my heart that was the most important part of the patient care. So we started getting all these people coming in for different things, and they'd show up at odd times of the day or night, and they'd say things like, we were driving on Route 2, and we saw a sign that said ER, and we knew we had to come in. And things like that would really happen. I had a guy come in one day. This is a funny story. I have a few stories, but let me tell you a funny one first. It's not so, maybe it won't be so funny if you're not a doctor, but we have a funny sense of humor, you know. So this guy comes in, and he's driving from the casino where he's been playing
the slot machines
all night long, and he's driving up to his house in Vermont. And he's in the first room there, and I go in to see him, and the chart says he needs a refill of his prescriptions. So I said, this will be easy. I'll go in. I'll get rid of him. The place is crazy busy, and I'm the only doctor. So I walk in, and I begin to talk to him, and something just strikes me about him. And when I walk out of the door, it's like, you got to ask him more questions. You know, it really hit me.
Yeah.
So I turned around and said, has anyone in your family ever had a heart attack? And he said, well, yeah, my brother had a heart attack. And I said, what are your symptoms again right now? He says, I just have pain in my wrist. It hurts when I move. The doctor's treating me in Vermont for that. I just need pain medicine. I don't have any chest pain. I don't have shortness of breath. I don't have nausea, nothing. None of the things that go with a heart attack. I said, well, will you just humor me and let me get an EKG? And he says, sure, why not? So I go out, tell the nurse, and the nurse goes, what? You want an EKG? You want more work? You know. I said, just humor me and get one. And I went back in the 5 minutes later, the paramedic comes with an EKG that shows that the guy's having a massive heart attack. I mean, I've been doing this a long time. This guy had no other symptoms. And he had pain in his wrist when he moved it, which clearly is not, you know, a cardiac symptom.
He'd been playing the slots, maybe.
He'd been playing the slots. So You know, he's having a massive heart attack. So I walk in the room and tell him, you're having a massive heart attack. And you got to go to the hospital. He goes, what? I said, hey, listen, it's not me. I just felt something inside, right? But I knew that it was God. You know, I really knew. Like, there was something, I just knew. And 15 minutes later, the helicopter was there. Wow. We had already given him the clot-blasting drugs, and he was off to the cath lab. That kind of stuff started happening. People would show up and say one thing on their triage note, and then when you get into the room, say, I'm really here because I want to kill myself. And you're like, okay. And you kind of get scared, but then you know you got to go there.
Right.
And they tell you this whole big story about their life and their pain and their faith and everything, and they end up getting the right care. That kind of stuff started going on, and it was very, very dramatic. And both the nurse I worked with, whose name is Teresa, and I were very drawn to Eucharistic adoration. So that, in fact, Gale's Ferry at that time was the place.
The only one,
right?
With
the only
adoration.
Place with Eucharistic adoration. So what would happen was, after my shift was over, sometimes at midnight, I would drive to Gale's Ferry in the middle of the night and just sit there with Jesus for hours. And I told my husband, hey, this is this time in my life, I don't know what's going on, but I have to sit there. And everybody
it's
in
so
my
peaceful.
Family thought that I was crazy. They all got together and talked to each other and decided I was having some kind of a breakdown because I was spending all this time in church and with, you know. But I said, no, this is good stuff. You know, I'm not crazy. But we went to adoration. We went all the time to adoration. We were there, you know, multiple times in the week and at strange hours. And this just fed us. And we began to feel just, I can't even explain. It's hard to explain. It's beyond words, but we were just filled with God, more and more things began to happen in the ER, and more people, we would pray with people openly in the ER, and we would give them rosaries, and at that time we started going to a monastery nearby that you might be familiar of, and to get fed because we didn't know where else to go. In the parishes, we weren't really getting what we needed somehow, you know what I mean? And we wanted something more. So we were just filled with God, and things started happening, all kinds of things. And we would pray with people in there, and they would go out with rosaries and miraculous medals and everything. And wow, it was like life. It was just a great challenge and a joy to be at work. And I began to feel inside that there was something else that I had to do with my life.
Especially when you go to adoration.
Yes.
God's telling you.
Well, that's exactly what happened. Something was going on. And I began to see, like Madison, differently. I began to see the mistakes that we'd made as doctors, that we let abortion take over. We let all these other anti-life procedures take place, euthanasia, cloning, all this stuff. And I was like, the doctors were like the guardians of medicine, put by God on this earth to take care of it, and we used to. And then something happened. And of course, I don't mean to condemn all doctors. There's plenty of doctors who suffer out there by themselves, like I was. You know, just we were by ourselves, and we knew, you know, they know something's wrong, but they don't know what to do. So in my heart, there was this little idea about a group for them. For doctors and nurses, and since TR and I had each other, it was like, there's got to be
more
something else.
Yeah.
There's more of you. So this little germ of an idea was placed inside of me, and I began writing about it. So I would sit in adoration. I still have all these notebooks, and I would just write and write and write about what, you know, what was coming to me about the medical field, and about what doctors needed to be doing, and about how God needed to be back in the hospitals. And slowly, slowly, over the years, this idea took form. And I only spoke about it to Teresa and to no one else. And I continued to go to Mass. And one day in Mass, I was at St. Joseph's in New London, I remember. And this name came to me. It was during Lent. And all of a sudden, it was like, Eucharistic Helpers of the Sick. I was like, okay. okay. I don't know what that is, but I'll write it down. And I felt like that was it. Like, here we were in adoration, and we were here to help the sick. Who are the sick? You know, they're not only the unborn. You know, we're on a pro-life show. It's like pro-life means pro-life. Pro-life for everyone. Yeah. Pro-life for everyone in the hospital. How can you take care of people in a hospital if there are abortions being done in the hospital? How can you be pro-life in a hospital if you're a doctor when there are abortions being done down the corridor? Yeah. You know, it seemed so unrealistic to me, and I had this yearning for something, and I began to look for a spiritual director everywhere. When I tell you, I mean, I asked everyone I knew. I went to confession, I asked the priest, I asked everyone I knew, and everywhere I had like a closed door. It was very, very interesting, and I knew in my heart I would find someone who would help me, but I didn't know. I didn't know when, I didn't know what, but I knew I needed help, and more help than I had. And again, I would just spend a lot of time in adoration and a lot of time in at retreats. I would go for 2 or 3 days at a time, and just sit with this idea. But the idea was an organization for healthcare workers. And it wasn't your usual organization, which put out papers and position papers and that kind of stuff. It was an on-the-ground running, like grassroots organization, which helped people live their faith in the workplace. And it was to take back medicine for God. Mm-hmm. So the organization was called the Eucharistic Helpers of the Sick. The mission is to reclaim healthcare for the Lord. And I lived with this for years. Finally, I found, through a very circuitous route, a spiritual director, a place to have the meetings, and we meet. We meet once a month.
What do you talk about? What are your goals?
Well, our goal is a big one. It's to reclaim healthcare for the Lord. We start with adoration. We then have a Divine Mercy chaplet. We go upstairs for a talk, and we have a speaker. It can be a doctor, a nurse, it can be a lawyer. We had a lawyer recently speak to us about the rights of Catholics. We met last Saturday, and we talked about the elderly, and the program was called Our Precious Elderly, the New Lepers. So we talked about that end of pro-life, where euthanasia is creeping in to the care of our elderly, and we have a talk, then we go down for the Holy Eucharist, and we have a wonderful chaplain and a wonderful place where we meet, the very holy place, and we have a mass, a beautiful homily that is tied into all of this, and we have confessions, of course. We are for confession with this every month. We get people from Connecticut, from Rhode Island, from Massachusetts. I think we've had a couple from New York. Yeah. We get about 25 people a month as it stands now, different people all the time. Some doctors, and I need more doctors. You know, I need more doctors. I would make a plea for people to contact us. And we do have an email where you can contact us. And if you do leave me your address on the email, I will make sure that you get a flyer. We then go upstairs and continue the discussion. We have questions, we have some fellowship, and a light lunch, and through this, people get to know each other. Mm-hmm. So connections are made.
Sure.
We live in a society of networking.
Yep.
Well, this is holy networking, and what it does is it supports us in our vocation, and our vocation may be just doing your job properly.
Right.
Our vocation may be praying with people and giving out miraculous medals. Our vocation may be, like one of our x-ray techs, sitting and interceding for us while something happens with the patient. So we all have different parts to play in this body of Christ.
What is one of the challenges of being a Catholic physician, especially in a secular hospital, on a daily basis?
Well, I try
besides
not to think
knowing
of
that the abortions are down the hall, I mean...
I try not to think of the challenges, because if I thought of them, I think I would get paralyzed.
But I think sometimes it's important for other people to know that you're faced with different challenges.
And I will tell you, you're in a secular environment. You're in an environment that oftentimes the truth about what is happening is obscured, so that you're not taught Catholic teaching about life. You're taught to be compassionate. But what does compassion mean? And I think people have to know that. What does compassion mean? When someone says compassion and is secular, you have to question, what do you mean by compassion?
Passionate.
Do you mean giving a dose of morphine to someone who's dying so they die? That to me is euthanasia.
Yeah.
Do you mean sitting with a dying person, getting the priest to give them the last sacraments, having their family surround them with love? So that's a big challenge. I think definitions are a big challenge. Of course, your faith, people do not want you to practice your faith in public. Okay? But I have found that I don't care. Because I have to face Jesus when I die.
That's right.
I don't have to face my boss.
Right.
And I respect my boss. That's part of my job as a Catholic too, right?
Right.
I have to respect authority.
Right.
So I do all the right things. But I represent love.
First and foremost.
I think that's the biggest thing. If you represent love, no one can argue with you. I also make sure I have a sign of my faith, so that when I'm with a patient, I have a cross on, a crucifix, a miraculous medal. I have, so they feel comfortable about talking. As a physician, I was not taught as a 56-year-old physician to deal with the spiritual aspects of things.
Hmm.
They're getting a little bit better with that. But the question is, what is spirituality?
Right.
Spirituality in many hospitals is Reiki.
Yeah.
Spirituality is respecting someone who's a Wiccan. You know, so it's the definitions again. So you have to live your faith as God intends, not as you want.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to find out what that is. But these things of our faith, having rosaries for people, having holy cards, people are at a time when you can really affect them. So as a physician, my right is to deal with them spiritually as well as physically. So as I'm doing the cardiac arrest, I'm saying the Divine Mercy Chaplet. Or the nurse is saying the Divine Mercy Chaplet. You know, this is what happens. We have to integrate our faith, but our faith has to come first.
Yeah.
And that's living your vocation.
And that's true for any vocation. It can't just be physicians. It can't just be priests.
Absolutely.
It's everybody. Teachers. It's lawyers. It's everybody.
Absolutely. And I've often thought it would be the Eucharistic helpers of anything. Not just of the sick, of the people who need lawyers, of the people who need, you know, supermarket goods, whatever. We must live our faith as God wants us to, which requires us to become holy.
Yeah, and to know our faith.
And to know our faith, and to represent our faith, and not to be afraid.
Yeah.
Because you should be afraid only of whoever can take you away from your faith.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you so much for joining us again. I'm looking forward to having you back.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. We hope that you've learned something. We hope that when you look in the mirror the next time, you'll realize yours is the face of pro-life. Join us again next time.